following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com. You're listening to the Underdog Sports NBA Show.
Cross green.
With host Tyler Lorie and Zandrick Ellison. Brought to you by Underdog Sports. Tune in every week as Tyler and Zan recap the biggest storylines and news in the NBA.
Welcome back to the 11th episode of the Underdog Sports NBA Show. I am Tyler Lorie, joined by my partner on the left coast, Zandrick Ellison. And Zan, how are you on this fine Wednesday morning?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited. Christmas is around the corner, and the NBA's giving you Christmas presents. Anytime you get Wizards, Suns, and Competence, you're happy, right?
Well, I wanted to find some way to lead the show with the Bulls just so we could keep the streak going. But, you know, this week in our 11th week of the best soap opera on television, the Wizards, Suns, and Grizzlies tried to engage in a three-team trade on Friday night that blew up into just epic proportions and created, I don't know, Zane, one of the best, like, Twitter nights of the year for sure.
Yeah, we were texting about it too, and it was just so funny because if you had to pick, like, the perfect storm of franchises, you know, the Wizards, the Suns, you know, Chris Wallace has gotten, you know, flack before. It was almost like the Incompetence Olympics. Like, who is going to fuck this up the most? It was hilarious.
I think we don't know right now. Like, I think I texted you. We'll get into the trade in a second, but I think, like, my initial reaction was that, like, I texted you and I was like, first of all, this trade is fucking stupid to begin with. Like, I don't particularly care one way or the other. And the biggest takeaway for me on the original deal, and then you know, the second deal obviously happened, was that I think the Wizards badly overestimated. They wanted to get Gortat out of the locker room last year because him and Wall didn't get along. And they instead take back Austin Rivers, and I think they really grossly underestimated the impact of having a personality like Austin Rivers in the locker room. Not even that he's a bad guy, just that he's very opinionated and everything like that. And so, to me, I don't know how much of this was about, like, how much better is Trevor Ariza than Oubre and Rivers, or how much better of a locker room guy is Ariza than those two guys. And I think that's a huge part of this deal, is that the Wizards just didn't realize that, like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe Wall and Beal don't like each other. I don't know, but maybe Wall and Beal both don't like Austin Rivers, and that's a huge problem. And then the other part of this is it was very financially driven for the Wizards as well. But so the original deal, if I remember this correctly, Zan, was Trevor Ariza goes to the Wizards, Memphis gets Kelly Oubre, the Suns get Seldon, Dylan Brooks, and Austin Rivers. Maybe it was Marshawn Brooks. We're not sure. And then the Suns send back, and then the Wizards got 2 second-round picks back. So that got reported right about 8 o'clock on Friday night. And then all hell broke loose because Memphis said they were sending Marshawn Brooks, who's played like 2 games this year, and Phoenix was like, no, 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 we want Dylan Brooks. And Memphis was like, we'd never deal Dylan Brooks. And then Danny LaRue, who does the Dunked On podcast and works for The Athletic, was the first person I saw that was like, man, I hope this trade gets taken down because these two teams screwed up which Brooks it was. So what was your reaction when you first saw that deal?
Well, you know, you could see the sort of confusion coming because we were texting about what's the deal. Everyone's trying to get the numbers right and the names right. And half the people on Twitter were reporting Marshawn and half of them were reporting Dylan.
Well, not to cut you off, but that was the one biggest part of this. So there's a guy, John Gambadoro, who is a radio host in Phoenix. And he was initially tweeting about the deal first. And he was like, no, guys, it's Dylan Brooks, 100%. Like, I've talked to people in the thing. And then, like, Woj was tweeting that it was Marshawn Brooks. And Zach Lowe was saying it was Marshawn Brooks. And it's like the guy in Phoenix, no matter what anyone says about this deal, it sounds like the Phoenix front office was sure they were getting Dylan Brooks. Because their side of this media, like, scrum or whatever, was steadfast reporting it was Dylan Brooks. 100%.
Well, and I heard Memphis pretty strongly deny their fault in this. They said that they didn't talk directly, and that I think Chris Wallace said that he had to pull his players out of a game and tell them that they're getting traded and then take it back, which is really awkward.
I mean, the Wizards had just lost. Like, the Wizards had just finished losing, and that trade broke. Like, I think they had just lost to the Nets, maybe. And reporters were in the locker room, like Ben Standing, who does an awesome job, Fred Katz for The Athletic. Ben Standing works for NBC Washington. Like, those guys were in the locker room when this deal broke online, like, and trying to talk to players. Like, people were talking to Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers, and nobody really knew. You could tell the framework of the trade was kind of breaking down because guys didn't really know what to say.
Well, and I understand it in a way of, like, you know, I think the most common reaction I heard from people is like, who cares about Dylan Brooks or Marshawn Brooks? They're both not great. I think Dylan Brooks is, I think, a little overrated, but he's okay.
He's at least a prospect, though. You know, Marshawn Brooks is a vagabond. He's played in China, you know.
Right. I think the underreported part of the Dylan Brooks side of the was that almost all these guys are free agents this summer, except for Dylan Brooks, who's under contract next year for like $1.5 million, which is a great bargain. And I think that's what was kind of the most appealing part of that from their perspective. But it's weird because the trade was so complicated, as you mentioned, second round picks and, you know, Dylan Brooks and Marshawn Brooks. And they ended up just cutting the middleman and trading Rivers and Oubre directly to Phoenix. And my question was, like, why didn't they just do that originally? Like, at what point did they say, hey, we need a third team and we need a second round pick. Let's call up Memphis. Like, why even get them involved? I don't understand.
Well, it offsets some of your costs, right? So one of the things with Kelly Oubre's contract is he is a restricted free agent. And when you do trade him, then somebody else has those restricted rights. So if he goes to Memphis, they can, you know, they can choose to sign him and match an offer sheet. It doesn't sound like Phoenix probably wants to do that, given, you know, kind of what they've done in the past or what they're doing now. I mean, they immediately bought out Austin Rivers. They've got like $38 million in dead money on the books this year. But so I'm not 100% sure. It sounds like Phoenix really wanted the Dylan Brooks piece of this. And they also got, I mean, they would have gotten Wayne Selden, which was a guy they could have seen to take a flyer on. He's not great, but, you know, decent wing depth for them. But I also think, like, I thought they would keep Austin Rivers because I thought they needed a point guard. And I don't think they wanted Kelly Oubre. Like, I think that they just were like, ah, we're not super sold on Oubre. So they find the third team to do it. And, you know, Memphis, it makes some sense. Like, I don't particularly think that Oubre is a tremendous prospect. I think I've told you on the show before that, you know, there are times when he's flashed a ton of talent. He seems to be a good locker room guy. People liked him in D.C. A lot of people I knew said he was a really nice guy. But I've heard that he's not super bright, and I've heard that, you know, he's very, very impulsive. So, you know, as a guy this year, I think you told me his stats, he's shooting 31% from three, 43% from the field, and he's always been overrated as a defender. He's been an active guy, like active hands, but, you know, he's in the wrong place a lot. He runs around kind of like a young guy a ton. He's not a great on-the-ball defender, and I just think that, you know, with the Wizards, I there was two things. They weren't going to be able to afford Kelly Oubre next year. Like, even at $30 million, like, if somebody just offered him 4 years, $40 million, they could not afford him. Like, it wasn't going to happen. They weren't going over the tax. So I think they kind of just split the difference and was like, all right, we'll trade this young guy who might be an asset, who hasn't really improved as much, for a guy that we had 4 years ago, who we know gets along with John and Brad, and we know is really good in the locker room, even though, like, Trevor Ariza was playing 35 minutes a game in Phoenix and not really making an impact. But now you have another expiring deal. You get Rivers off the books now. You know, they had traded for Sam Decker, who's actually been pretty good for them. Like, so, I mean, I don't know. The deal seems to me that Washington panicked, as per usual, and that Phoenix is kind of just like, hey, we want to make sure that we have the cleanest books we can possibly have to have Booker and Ayton. Maybe a free agent will come here for a long-term deal. Maybe we can hit it in the draft. But, like, I'm not 100% sure what's going on in Phoenix either right now, Sam.
Well, let's talk, like, break it down team by team. Like, let's talk with Washington, which is close to your heart. I'm a little higher on this trade than you are in the immediate term. You know, Ariza, as you mentioned, he wasn't shooting well this year for Phoenix. He was, you know, under 40% from the field, and he's 33. And you know, I think he's always been a little we kind of have this impression of him as this great 3-and-D guy. He's not a good shooter. He's like a passable 3-point shooter, which is good enough, right?
I mean, Wall honestly changed the course really of Ariza's career. Like, he's had a very good career, but, like, the original, like, John Wall whipping passes to someone to corner threes, like, that was Trevor Ariza. That's what the guy did. And they got him on a really cheap deal originally. But one thing to keep in mind is, like, they let Ariza walk despite what they knew he could be. I remember being upset about this in the time. I think it was 13-14, maybe. It might have been 14-15. But, like, I remember being upset about this because they let him go because they drafted Otto Porter. And then they wanted to hoard space for Kevin Durant. So they kind of pushed their chips in the middle, and we saw how that happened. But now they go get this guy again, and it's like what the heck is going on here? Like,
well, you know what I like about it is I think Ariza, you know, you have Otto Porter at small forward, but I feel like they can play together. And I like the idea of Wall just being surrounded by spacers, whether they're good ones or average ones. I think it helps their, you know, defensive switchability. And basically what you said about Kelly Oubre, like Ariza, you could look at as like, hey, maybe he's just a 10 years older version of Oubre. Why would you want that? I just think he's better. I think he's a higher basketball IQ guy. He's a better defender. As long as they're both free agents at the end of the year and it's just a 1 year rental, I would rather have a reason. I think he's going to add a win or two for them.
Here is where I will relent for a second. The Wizards got the best player in the deal as of today, right? You're right. Ariza is better than Kelly Oubre right now. He is better than Austin Rivers right now. It's pretty clear they wanted out from Austin Rivers really quickly. I mean, both the Suns and the Wizards make this deal on December 15th, which is the first time you could trade somebody who you had just signed. So I just think the problem here, Zan, and this is the shit with the Wizards fan. It just feels like rinse and repeat over and over again. It's like you make these bad decisions and then you make a deal, you panic, you give up an asset because of a varying number of things that have happened. And then, you know, maybe you make the playoffs, you limp in as the seventh seed, and then you get under the luxury tax and we just rinse and repeat and you never have an opportunity to actually make the team a whole lot better. And now you're looking at a situation where like Otto Porter's playing less minutes than he has in the last 2 years. I don't know what's going on. He's, you know, 11 points a game, like it's not good enough. So now Ariza's going to play a lot, but he's not under contract past this year. You're playing Jeff Green a ton. That's another older guy. So like they're not going to play Troy Brown because like Scott Brooks doesn't want to play rookies. Thomas Satoransky, like last night against the Hawks, they lose the game against the Hawks. It was so easy to see it coming. It's Atlanta. You know they're going to go out and they're going to party. But like they crush the Lakers, right? Wall has an unbelievable game. He has like 40, 14, and 6. They destroy LeBron at home. They go to Atlanta. They sign Chasen Randolph from the G League to their active roster. And then Scott Brooks comes off the bench in the first half in a game that they need quality minutes and plays Sato off the ball and plays the dude Chasen, who like they haven't had on the team for more than fucking 24 hours. And it's like the organization is just so dysfunctional to me because they just keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And so now you've traded a guy that, by the way, they traded up to get and gave up another asset for that. So they trade Kelly Oubre. You traded Gortat to get him out of there for Austin Rivers. Well, now you got nothing for Marcin Gortat. I mean, unless you want to consider Ariza. But then like once Ariza leaves, you know, what are you going to do? You still need to play Otto Porter more. Like he has to play a lot. Markieff Morris comes off the books. Like this is a team that next year, like they've like shoved all their chips in the middle again. And it's going to be like, maybe they're the sixth seed, Zan. And that's the problem I have with this deal.
Well, I think that you're right that their chips are, it's almost like in poker, it's like they're holding, you know, it's like they didn't blow it up. They decided not to trade Wall if they could have. Or Beal, and they don't make a big move, but they're like, look, this is good enough to get us where people thought we would be, maybe 6, 7, 8 range. And I actually don't have a big problem with that because as well as Toronto is playing this year, there's no one in the East that I look at as unbeatable. Like if Washington played Boston right now, I think Boston would be favored, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was a very close series. I mean, like, I don't think there's a boogeyman that really scares them. If they can make it into the playoffs, you know, and hopefully Wall, you know, is the best player on the series and wins a surprise series. I don't think it's that far-fetched.
I will say that the talent level of the Wizards is certainly like intoxicating for a typical NBA fan. You look at them, you're like, this team should be better. But here's the thing. They don't play hard every night. They stink defensively. I told you this before we started recording because I know you didn't watch, but like Jeremy Lin is like destroying Wall and Beal down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Like they got to get stops. And Jeremy Lin gets like 4 straight legitimate layups, saying like right at the rim. This isn't a team that I feel comfortable. Maybe Ariza's going to turn that around. I don't know. But it's been 4 years since Ariza's been in that locker room. So like saying like, oh, we got a great locker room guy back. Like the habits that have been created for the time that Ariza's gone, you know, I don't know that those are something you can get out from under. But again, like I would agree on a strictly like paper basis. In this iteration of the NBA season, 2018-2019, the Wizards nominally got better. And that is ultimately Ernie Grunfeld's job. Again, he's been there 15 years and they still stink. So to me, it's like, I know how this story is going to go, Zan. Like, they're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs, or maybe they steal a series from somebody. Like, maybe they could beat the Sixers. I don't know. Or maybe they could beat Indiana. But if they make the playoffs and they're under the luxury tax, Ernie Grunfeld's going to be back as their GM. And we're going to rinse and repeat. And we're going to be on this show in 2 years. And we're going to talk this, you know, hopefully by then we'll have a lot of ads and we'll be making money. But like, Zan, like, we're going to be talking about Ernie Grunfeld doing something like trading a first round pick for an average player for the playoff, for a playoff run. And it's like, it's literally happened so much. And because of the decisions he's made in the past, he has to make decisions like this. And I think it's time to say, like, look, this just isn't good enough. I'm not saying you blow it up. I don't know what to do. But saying, like, because Kelly Oubre hasn't improved enough, we're going to trade him for Trevor Ariza. And keep in mind, that's 60 games of Trevor Ariza. I mean, it's the same shit every year, Zan. It's like, it's demoralizing.
Well, I understand your frustration. I understand your frustration. My point was more like, if this is a Band-Aid, I think it's an effective Band-Aid. And look, you know, being the eighth seed and getting bounced in the first round is not fun, but it's better than being the ninth seed. You know, it's better than being the 10th seed. And I think they would have been at risk of missing the playoffs if they didn't shake up this roster a little bit. But to your point, like, I think long term, I think Grunfeld probably should go. And I think there's real concerns about Scotty Brooks. The defense keeps getting worse and worse. The rotations are questionable. And, you know, he's always demonstrated this problem picking the right most effective lineup. You know, we all remember Kendrick Perkins getting too many minutes in Oklahoma City.
Last night he had an all five, like an all bench lineup in like very early in the game. Like when they started out down 10-0, he didn't pull all five starters like Jim Boylan. Didn't pull one out of the Greg Popovich, Jim Boylan handbook. But he had like a lineup in with like no Wall, no Beal, like no Porter. And you're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, what does he think? Has he never learned? There's so much tape of like, hey, play Westbrook and Durant together. Hey, don't play Kendrick Perkins. And it's like, we're 8 years down the road in Scott Brooks's career. And he seems to be a great motivator. He seems to be a really good guy. But man, Zan, like, what does this guy watch on film? What analytics is he given? What are his assistant coaches telling him that, like, he just doesn't understand not to do that?
I always struggle with coaches like that, or like Vinny Del Negro always seemed like such a nice guy.
Same deal.
Like, but you know, at a certain point, you're like, I do think they need to shake it up. And to your point about like Austin Rivers in the locker room, I think what's plagued this team for years, it's a double-edged sword. Like John Wall's like swagger and like confidence in himself. Like that's a guy who thinks he's the best player in basketball. And I think that kind of trickles down, and the Wizards think they're better than they are. And they think they could win the East every year. And they don't really, you know, have that chip on their shoulder and push hard every year. And I think Austin Rivers is the same way. He probably thinks he's better than he is. I think Kelly Oubre.
He definitely thinks that. Kelly Oubre, I'm not sure, but you're right about Rivers. And the thing with Wall is like, it's amazing that you have that opinion of yourself when you try only like, I'm going to be aggressive and give Wall some respect. Like he tries like 66% of the time, and like, it's bad, you know, it's bad.
Well, and that's why I always compare him to Westbrook in the sense that like they're similar, maybe talents, similar contracts, similar ages. I just wish they would learn from each other, because Westbrook, for all his flaws, like goes balls to the wall every night. And I think if Wall had a little bit more of that, the team would be better off. But let's talk about Phoenix. Kelly Oubre, you know, we're mixed on him. Do you think there's a chance that they re-sign him and make him part of this core, or is it just a dump?
I don't know what they'll do, honestly. I think at a reasonable contract, Kelly's a guy that, like, you know, the talent is there. He's super talented in high school. Didn't get a chance to play a ton in Kansas, but you can see the talent. You can see him he had big games in D.C., I do think there's a propensity for guys too, and I don't want to steal this thought, but Troy Halliburton, who, you know, has written for a lot of things in D.C., wrote this article for like the Washington City paper about how like casual fans see Kelly Oubre with like a big dunk or like a corner three in a big moment on SportsCenter and then don't watch the rest of the game. So they equate what they see to him being a better player than he actually is. And I think Kelly is not without flaws. But I mean, I think for Phoenix, like this is a young guy. He's what is he? This is his fourth year in the
23.
League.
23. The problem is like he's 23 and talented, I guess, but it's his fourth year. And so having him enter restricted free agency and him not figuring it out yet, basically, or not developing into a consistent shooter, in a way, maybe that's good from Phoenix's point of view, because I don't know if he's getting a huge contract.
I would be very concerned about giving Kelly Oubre $10 million a year.
Well, I think he might get more because the question is like, he looks the part, right? I mean, like in terms of his body type and he fits like the modern NBA. And I do think there's a part, like people think he's like really attractive, I guess. And he looks like a star, I guess, because he has light colored eyes or something. Honestly, it's like
his he looks
the part and he just doesn't play like a productive or above average or even a competent starter. If you can get him for $10 million a year for like 3 years, I'd be fine with that. I just wonder if some team's going to like swoop in like desperate team and overpay for him based on sort of the overrated name value or the pedigree.
I liked him better for Memphis than I do for Phoenix. I like him in a system that's much more structured with legitimate veteran leadership, and that's not Phoenix. So my guess is Phoenix is going to see what they have, see if he can make some more shots, see if he fits in with what they do, and then likely I don't think they will match an offer sheet for him, especially because for Phoenix, I think it's all about flexibility. You obviously have Devin Booker. You know, he's on a max deal. DeAndre Ayton looks every bit of a max big man in the NBA. He's not been amazing defensively. He's been better than I thought, but he has been awesome offensively. We haven't really talked about a ton of rookies, and everyone wants to talk about Luka, but like DeAndre Ayton leads rookies, I believe, in win shares. So, you know, you look like you got what you wanted out of the number one pick, and I think they need to stay flexible. And that's why, like, the dead money situation with them, like, the Austin Rivers situation was so interesting. They don't have a point guard, right? They have very few vets on their team. Josh Jackson has been pretty disappointing. But to take another wing like Kelly Oubre and then immediately cut Austin Rivers, I think is a weird decision. Like, you, if you're Phoenix, like, you have to want somebody to run your team. And I get that they want Devin Booker to be, you know, get a lot of pick and roll opportunities. But, like, Austin Rivers must just this is what I never understood. So they cut him, right? Austin Rivers is what, 26 years old, 25 years old?
Well, obviously is 26. And one of the arguments they said, you know, in the PR kind of statement when they cut him, they're like, we feel like he should contribute to a veteran team. And I'm like, I don't think so.
That's what I'm getting at. Like, why is Austin Rivers getting that type of respect? Like, it's not like Austin Rivers is a 15-year NBA proven pro. Like, he played for his dad. Like, honestly. Like, I don't understand that. Like, so why is Austin Rivers walking in and saying, like, I don't want to play here because you guys can't win? Have we ever seen
I don't think it was that. I think it was, you know, you mentioned, like, I don't know if this is the greatest situation for Kelly Oubre because it's kind of crowded with the young wings there. But as you mentioned, like, this seems on paper to be a perfect situation for Austin Rivers.
For Austin Rivers, yeah, 100%.
He's like an unconventional point guard, if he is a point guard. But that's kind of what Phoenix is looking for, right? Like, they want to play Devin Booker running the show a lot. They just need a decent defender at the point guard spot, and that's why
who can make an open three. Like, it makes perfect sense for Austin Rivers, and Phoenix was like, no, like, we want nothing to do with this.
Well, I think it may be their opinion. I think it comes from them, and them thinking, you know, Austin Rivers had a good year last year with the Clippers. He averaged 15 points a game. That was his best year, sort of his breakout moment. He has a reputation for being a pretty good defender. He's playing really badly this year. And I think he's been a net negative for the majority of his career. So I think the Phoenix is just saying, look, this guy's just not a productive NBA.
I would think that like the last 65 games of last year, which is the majority of the season, is really the only time I've ever watched Austin Rivers and been like, I think this is a really good NBA player. Not a really talented guy. He is talented. He's super talented. But what we saw last year from Austin Rivers is like a sixth man playing for the Clippers. That was the first time I think I ever saw Austin Rivers. And I was like, yeah, you know what? This guy's a good NBA player. And we didn't see that this year.
No, and you look at, like, just to cite some numbers, like, in his career, 2.4 assists in 24 minutes a night. And it's sort of that, you know, blinders on scorer mentality that makes you question his, you know, ability to help run a team or even play within an offense. Kelly Oubre, by the way, same thing, 0.7 assists this year.
Yes, he is not a fan of passing the ball. He does not pass.
And I'm a big believer in addition by subtraction. You know, we might not talk too much about Indiana, but they're playing well. And I do like a column, a yearly thing where I say, like, who's the least valuable player in the NBA? And not the worst player, because the worst player is probably like the 15th man. But who's the guy who's getting minutes and is hurting the team? And 2 years ago, it was Monte Ellis on Indiana. Do you remember? He was starting, getting like 25, 30 minutes a night and just playing really poorly. And I don't think it was a coincidence that Indiana took a major uptick after cutting him or whatever and not giving him 25 minutes a night. So I think for the Wizards, they might think, look, we're giving Austin Rivers 24, 25 minutes a night, and he's just a negative. Like, losing that, I don't know who they're going to replace him with necessarily, Satoransky or whoever, but just not playing a bad player is going
to
help us.
Well, that was the other part of this. Like, and again, not to go back to the Wizards, and we'll go to the Grizzlies in just a second, but that was the other part of this. When they originally traded for Austin Rivers, I was like, okay, that makes sense. But like, I want Satoransky to play point guard. Like, the games that Wall was injured and Sato was their starting point guard, like, he showed that he can play point guard. But Brooks just doesn't want to play him as a backup point guard. I don't understand it. Like, he's the perfect guy to stagger too. That's the most annoying part about this. Like, you play him with Beal, and Beal's a shooter, and you can let Beal kind of initiate some of your offense, but Sato can bring the ball up, so it takes pressure off Brad. And then when Wall's in the game, it's the same deal. Like, you know, he can spot up with Wall because he's not an amazing shooter, but he's a good shooter. So it's like, why did you even trade for Austin Rivers in the first place? And they're like, oh, we can play Rivers and Satoransky together. Like, let Sato be your backup point guard. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah. And Austin Rivers, like, he seemed like he should have been that combo guard they needed, but he's just not, maybe he's not good.
I mean, his numbers this year were terrible. Like, 7 points in like 25 minutes a night. He was shooting like 30% from three. Yeah, under 40% from the field. I mean, terrible.
Do you think now, moving forward, they claim that he's going to go help a contender and be a playoff factor. Do you think anyone, who's going to sign Austin Rivers?
The Los Angeles Clippers?
Oh, man.
No, I mean, seriously, like, so that's the part of this. We texted about this a little bit, but Memphis was rumored to sign Austin Rivers. And I texted you back and I said, if Memphis signs Austin Rivers, somebody at the league should be investigating Memphis, because Memphis' whole deal in this trade, and they played stupid, like, they never communicated with Phoenix directly. They only went through Washington, which is, as I understand it, this is how these deals go. When, you know, one team is facilitating between another, you know, they're talking to both teams, and they get the idea of, like, this is what this is. What do you think? And often you use a conduit for that. So, and then it comes out after the fact that, like, even Robert Sarver said he talked to Robert Pera, and, like, the Grizzlies had talked to Phoenix about Dylan Brooks, and Phoenix had asked for medicals on Dylan Brooks and not Marshawn Brooks. And so, like, my thing is, I think it's a little shady. I think something happened in Memphis and they were like, no, 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 we want this guy. And I don't know where the trade breakdown was that got them out of it. But, like, I mean, we better hope Dylan Brooks is pretty good, right? He's injured right now. Like, they wouldn't trade an injured guy for a usable wing. And then they're going to go maybe sign Austin Rivers. And we've heard since then that that's not looking likely. And I don't know if it's because the league office was like, you cannot get involved in this, because of how this went down.
I'm looking at, like, just Roto-World depth charts and trying to find a team that could sign Austin Rivers or play him, you know?
Orlando, I heard, is a possibility. He's obviously from there, played high school basketball there. But
and it's funny, we just talked about it a lot at length, but, like, Phoenix is just clearly the team with the biggest hole at point guard. They signed Jamal Crawford, who was my least valuable player last year. And the fact that they would play him over Austin Rivers is crazy.
If you're a good team and you know that this is kind of Austin Rivers, is like, he played his way out of DC in a situation where they needed a backup point guard, like, they wanted one. Like, he played himself out of DC so quickly. Like, what veteran team that's playing well is going to, like, I mean, you got to hope your culture is amazing. Like, can you sign him in, like, would Portland take him on the league minimum? I don't think so, right?
Well,
like,
the team that kind of – the only team that I could maybe talk myself into, I'm looking at Houston right now. They're, you know, they have Michael Carter-Williams, who they have as a backup point guard, allegedly, was supposed to help. Brandon Knight, you know, coming back. He's never been a positive player, really. Would you rather have Austin Rivers or Brandon Knight? I mean, it's not, you know.
I wouldn't want Austin Rivers on the same team with James Harden or Chris Paul. I just wouldn't want him, you know, and I don't know what.
And just from the locker room, you think Brandon Knight's just.
And I think that there's no way that they would even consider that without asking Chris Paul. And if he said no, they'd be like, all right, we're not going to do it. Like, and I'm serious about that angle. Like, what about, I mean, I don't even know. Like, there doesn't even appear to be, like, look, he's going to catch on. Like, I do think Austin Rivers is a capable NBA player. Whether or not I think he's a good player, you know, it's neither here nor there. But I don't know where, like, the Austin Rivers is going to play for a contender thing. Like, that just doesn't check out for me at all. It really just does not. Like, maybe Milwaukee, like, they can use guard depth or something. I don't know, but it just does not check out. I'm not bringing him into a situation that I think is he could potentially negatively impact.
Right. And that's the problem. Like, we're talking about Austin Rivers, like, what's the best situation for him? But if we both agree that he's sort of a negative right now at 26, neither of us would sign him, right?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe if I was like Utah and I'm looking for kind of a way to set a spark, and I think he'll come in and make open shots and keep his head down. But you know, in DC, he loved talking to the media. He gave a bunch of interviews. He was going to like start a podcast. And it's like pretty clear that like Austin Rivers' like sense of self on the NBA hierarchy isn't necessarily in line with what it should be. And I'm not out here saying that like, look, you automatically got to fall in line, but there is hierarchies in NBA locker rooms, and the Wizards is as screwed up as it can possibly be. But like, I mean, he's not going to go to Boston. Like, they're not going to sign him there. He's not going to go to Denver. Like, it's not going to happen.
He's a net negative. The one situation I might actually sign him is if I'm a bad team, like Orlando or Atlanta, and you just kind of want somebody to clog up minutes and maybe take some pressure off Trae Young with the idea that he's going to help you lose games, you know? And like, he'll like, you know, put up the illusion of being competitive when in fact he's a negative and sucking wins away. And that's good on both sides.
As of right now, like I said, I haven't seen anything else really. I mean, he has to sign somewhere by February 9th. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know. Otherwise he loses money or something. Like, he had to give back $650,000 to the Suns. So it's a weird situation with Austin Rivers. Let's talk about good teams though. Cause talking about bad teams for 30 minutes, just, I mean, it just makes me sad, Zan. Like, it's just, the league has so many good teams.
It's funny, but we sapped up all the comedic value of those incompetent teams. Let's talk about the teams that are rolling.
All right. What do you got? Let's do Denver. Denver is one of the most injured teams in the league, if not lost the most injury minutes right now for starters. Like, Gary Harris is injured, Will Barton's injured, Paul Millsap's injured. But somehow they beat Toronto. I mean, I'm pretty sure Toronto's at full strength. They beat Toronto 96-89 the other night. And now Denver is the one seed in the West. And I know we talk about this every single show that like the West is clogged, but Denver 20-9. Really, really playing well. What are your thoughts on Denver moving forward? Like, clearly they can beat the best teams in the league because they have a very good record. But what are your thoughts on Denver?
Well, we always talk about like the difference between regular season and playoff, which teams are built for which one. I just love the Denver depth. And that's why I think they're thriving this regular season. You know, guys go down and they have like, you know, soldiers off the assembly line ready to go. You might talk more about Monty Morris later, but the guy that really impressed me that we haven't talked about much, we've talked about Trey Lyles, who I think is underrated and in line for a contract. Mason Plumlee, backup center, who got a big contract and everyone kind of thought it was a bad one. He's just a competent, quality, you know, rotational big man, you know, and I think he has the rap of being a Plumlee, you know, because his brothers are kind of plotting ineffective big men, but he's pretty agile. He's a good ball mover. He's a pretty good defender. I just think he's a really quality piece for them. And it's guys like that are keeping this team at the top of the standings.
Yeah, they've also been able to win on the road. This is from Adam Stanko on Twitter, but only three teams in the West with a winning record on the road. Nuggets 8-6, Warriors 8-7. And then the Sacramento Kings, our favorite team, is, I believe, 9-8. So, you know, Denver, really good at home. Obviously, they're 11-1 at home based on that. But I agree. Their depth is good. I worry a little bit without Gary Harris, and he was struggling a little bit. Jamal Murray really has shot it very poorly since his 48 ball against the Celtics. So I worry a little bit about them scoring. But like I said, I think, like, you know, Jokic or Jokic, however you're supposed to say his name, I'm not sure where we are on the GIF debate on this podcast either, but I think that when you have a guy like that and you know, like, all right, he runs your team, you know what guys' roles are, then when you have this type of depth, it prepares you for the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying I think they can beat, you know, Golden State or whatever, but maybe they can. They have a lot of really good players and like depth of guys that can get buckets for them if they need it, if somebody has an off night. And that's why, to me, that's why I like Toronto too, because of that. Like, they have a bunch of guys that can help out.
Right. And I'm really impressed with Denver in the sense that, like, Jokic, there's always this perception that he was a poor defender, you know, slow, unathletic. He would limit their defensive capability. And for whatever reason, how smoke and mirrors, whatever they're doing, Mike Malone, like, their defense is playing really well. So I think they're a legit threat to go to the conference finals. But more so than that, you look at how young this team is. You know, Millsap will come and go, but they have Trey Lyles to back him up. And then the really interesting piece is their lottery pick, Michael Porter Jr., is not going to probably play this year. But if he can be 80% of what we thought, like this might be the best young roster in the NBA. Is that a thing too much?
I think that's very fair. They are fifth in offense and, or I'm sorry, sixth in offense and fifth in defense right now. So one of, I think there's only two, there's three teams I think ranked in the top 10 in both, and it's them and Golden State, and I'm not sure the other, but yeah, I agree. I mean, you got Murray who's 21, Gary Harris is 24, Jokic 23, Wancho is 23, Will Barton 28. They just gave him a deal. Millsap, yeah, 33. But then, yeah, Lyles, Malik Beasley, Monte Morris are all 22 and 23. Plumlee's 28. And then, yeah, Michael Porter is 19. So this is a team, you know, not including Nick Young, who they just signed. This is a team that the future is very, very bright. And we've talked about this before.
How bright is it? Like, do you think, you know, Boston's the young team that everyone talks to, the media slobbers over them and says they're going to be the next title team. Who do you think has the better roster for 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, Boston or Denver?
If they retain everybody, like I've been on record saying that I don't think Kyrie Irving is going to play for the Celtics next year. So that's a big deal. You know, if Kyrie's not there and, you know, maybe last year when everything was put together before Gordon Hayward got hurt, it's one thing, you know, but right now Jaylen Brown is struggling. Jason Tatum has maybe not regressed, but we're seeing a little bit of the shot selection that was concerning before. He's not necessarily, you know, maybe doing a great job at his role of like the second or third option. And for me, it just feels like Denver clicks. Their roster is constructed a little bit easier for them to play off of each other. But again, we haven't seen them at full strength. But I really like Denver going. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer. And maybe it's because I'm lower on Jason Tatum than some other people. Like, I don't think Jason Tatum's ceiling.
I'm pretty high.
Go ahead.
I'm pretty high on Tatum, but I think, you know, the Jaylen Brown issue is sort of causing us to rethink their ceiling.
Well, it's not even that I think their ceiling is low, because, like, again, they're not playing great this year, and I think everyone just assumed, like, oh, they put it all together, Brad Stevens will do this, and they very well might do that. Like, this is easily a team that can make the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think that, like, this may sound totally insane, okay? So you tell me if I'm insane when I say this, but one of the reasons I like Toronto and I liked Milwaukee better, and maybe even I don't like Philly quite as much, because I don't believe in Embiid. I just don't believe in Embiid's health. But like Denver, I would say, like, Jokic is not the same to me. Like, Kawhi and Giannis at their best are two of the five best players in the league. Jokic is maybe in the top 10. I think there are people that would argue him in the top five because the advanced stats say a lot of really good things about him. But I don't know that I think that that's Jason Tatum's ceiling. Like, I don't know that I think Jason Tatum's going to be as good as Paul George. Like, but there are people talking about Jason Tatum being Kobe Bryant. And so if Kyrie leaves and Tatum has to become this sort of like mid-range scorer, I don't know if that makes your team the best it can be. Whereas like Kawhi and Giannis and Jokic, they all seem to have games that really fit with where the NBA is now. And so for me, I'm not hating on Boston going forward. I still think they have a super bright future. They still have, you know, a couple picks or two. Like, Sacramento's pick's not going to be as good as they thought. But I just don't know that their ceiling is 65-win team night in and night out, which is something that I think people would have said before the year. Just given what we've seen in, you know, I think they were 18-11. I'm not sure if they played last night, but, you know, it's 30 games. I don't know if their ceiling is like 65 wins and they can beat the Warriors. Whereas I do think Toronto at their best maybe could. I do think Milwaukee in a year probably can. And then Denver, who knows, in 2 years, if Michael Porter Jr. is really good, it's a lot to be excited about, I think, for Denver, especially when it looks like Golden State should be, you know, coming apart by then.
I wouldn't bet on Denver winning a title in the future, but I would bet on them being like the next Toronto, in the sense that they're, you know, a fixture in the playoffs, top four seed, getting close every year. They might still need another move, their own version of Kawhi, to push them over the top. But I mean, that's a team that's built to last in terms of their fit, in terms of their depth. I really love them. I don't know about this season. I still think they're young, and I don't know if they would have the best player in any series in the playoffs. No disrespect to Jokic, but so that could limit them this year.
I worry a little bit about Jamal Murray, because that's a guy that we thought could be another scorer for them. And again, he leads them in shot attempts per game, but he's shooting 42.5% from the field, only 30% from three. And he's not really getting to the foul line as much as I thought he would. So if he doesn't take that jump as a scorer, I think that's tough. If he's going to be a high volume scorer for them, it's the same deal. So I don't know. Again, there's a clear delineation of who's the best player on the team and who is the, you know, team leader. And that's, you know, they run their offense through Jokic. He averages 7.5 assists, 10 rebounds, and 18 points a game. He's leading scorer, leading assist man, leading rebounder. Like, and there's not a lot of guys that do that. So that worries me a little bit in a playoff series. If Jamal Murray's shooting comes around and he gets it up to 35 or 36% with Gary Harris shooting, you know, in the 40s like we expect, this is a dangerous team, Zan. I mean that. I agree with what you're saying. They maybe they don't have the best player in any series, but if the draw breaks the right way and they don't have to play LeBron and maybe they don't have to play Houston, but they get like New Orleans or they get Portland or they get the Clippers and then you get Golden State, like I'm not saying it could happen, or I'm not saying it will happen, but I think there's a world it could happen given how they guard and given their wing depth and their perimeter players.
I could see it the same when, you know, I talk about them being the next Toronto. I could see a scenario where they disappoint in the playoffs. Partly, you know, I heard Utah used to complain about this a lot, that they didn't feel like they got a lot of calls because they didn't have, you know, they weren't a big market and they didn't have marquee players and refs didn't give them the benefit of the doubt. I could see Denver falling into that a little bit. Say they played Houston in the first round or something like that.
That's pretty good. Denver, 22nd in free throw attempts so far this year. So pretty, I'm not sure if you looked at that, but.
No, I didn't look at that, but I, and like, as you said, you know, Jamal Murray's not attacking, you know, Jokic isn't going to bang around and get, you know, 15 free throws a game. But I do think there's a little bit of that sort of the league doesn't quite respect them yet. The refs don't quite respect them yet. And I don't think Chris Paul or James Harden would be scared by this team.
Well, and then the other thing, too, is the rim protection issue in the playoffs kind of like elevates itself a little bit more. And again, like we've talked about, they're very good defensively. But Jokic is not an amazing rim protector. He's not an amazing pick and roll player. I'm not sure if he's the type of guy that's going to get in an argument with Devin Booker like Enes Kanter did about pick and roll defenses. But I think in the playoffs, as teams kind of hunt weaknesses, then that gets a little bit more magnified. So I will agree there, Zan, that that worries me a little bit in the playoffs. But I, like I said, if I'm a Denver fan, I feel very, very comfortable about where this team is right now. And that's, I mean, I think they're going to win 50 games. I don't know if one of us, I don't remember if I said I thought they were a sneaky candidate for 50 wins or not. But again, like I do think this is a team with a lot of very good players. One, I think Jokic is a star for sure. I think he just plays the game a little differently. But I do think they need a secondary guy to take a little bit more of a leap. And whether that's Murray, whether that's Gary Harris, you know, whether Millsap comes back and has really good numbers, I'm not sure. But I think it needs to be one of those guys because it doesn't, I mean, it's not going to be Michael Porter this year. And it stands to reason that it probably won't be Michael Porter next year. I think it's probably going to take Porter a little while to figure out his game. But he could be that guy. I mean, he could be.
And the great thing from Denver fans' point of view is like if you set expectations, like coming into the year, it was stacked in the West. You're just trying to make it, right? And just make sure you get there first. And the fact that
they missed the playoffs last year on the last day.
Right. Right. And the fact that they're racking up a lot of wins early, even if it regresses somewhat, and they fall down in that 4 or 5 range, you know, you're up 5 wins, 6 wins on teams like Houston and New Orleans and Minnesota. Like, I think it's pretty safe to say that they're probably going to make the playoffs. Now they have to feel good about that. And that was not a guarantee coming to
it. It seems unbelievable that after 30 games, they're the one seed in the West. And there is some scenarios where they don't make the playoffs. Now I would bet a ton of money on Denver making the playoffs. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they're not going to, but it is funny in the West. So let's talk about that for a second. Like our guy, LeBron James, We sing his praises all the time. Last week said we both said we thought he was the MVP. They lose to Washington. They get blown out real bad. He plays not very well, but obviously LeBron also, I think he knows when they're not going to win games, it's fine for him to kind of like shut it off. Then they lose to the Nets last night. And then we get into one of your favorite storylines, and that's LeBron taking, you know, shots at his teammates without saying, hey, my teammates suck. So where are we on the Lakers right now? And is LeBron?
It's so hard to figure out because LeBron off the court, I think, is probably like my favorite superstar in terms of how he handles his business. Literally how he handles his business and his politics and his family compared to even like a guy like Jordan, who I, you know, was gambling and carousing and, you know, getting in
that's
trouble.
That we have absolute opposite opinions because I like the guy that's going to go to the blackjack table for, you know, 18 hours straight. And you like
the guy. Can you imagine in this day and age, who knows if he got allegedly suspended for gambling on basketball, but just the fact that you're a high stakes gambler and a professional athlete is such a dangerous thing.
How would you like a little bit of gambling story time involving NBA players right now? Do we have some time for that? Because I got 2 good ones for you.
You tell me. You're the keeper of the game in terms of time.
Right? I have one of my closest friends is a poker dealer in Maryland. And Paul Pierce enjoys blasting off at the poker table. So when he played for the Wizards, there's a poker room called Maryland Live that had just opened up, one of the biggest ones on the East Coast, 50 tables in the room or whatever. And Pierce would routinely go play Pot Limit Omaha, a little four-card action for people that don't know what that is. And games would form around him, and they would literally play, you know, 100, 200, 25, 50 or whatever. And there were nights when, like, allegedly Pierce lost, you know, $50,000, $60,000. Like, guys, the game would never run unless he played, but he wanted to play, like, high-stakes poker. And guys would flock to it. There'd be waiting lists, and he would always talk about it. But another guy who's actually allegedly a very good poker player, Russell Westbrook, plays by himself, quietly, keeps his hood up, got kicked out of a poker room for refusing to remove his hood. But Russell Westbrook, also a guy, but doesn't lose a lot of money, plays very low stakes poker, like 1-2, 1-3, 2-5, for a guy that makes, you know, probably has made $200 million in his career. So he's the opposite of Paul Pierce, who was just like blasting money around at the table in front of people that I knew, whereas Russell Westbrook will sit down at a table and buy in for $500 and fold for hours on end and not talk to anyone.
That makes me think a lot higher of Russell Westbrook, actually, because I do think there's a discipline to gambling that's so important.
In MGM in National Harbor, brand new casino in the DC area, they have a rule where you cannot wear hoods because they want to be able to like kind of see what everyone's doing. So he comes in. I want to say they had played the Wizards and they were going to leave the next day. So he comes into the poker room, checks in, he's wearing a sweatsuit, whatever, just a random like gray sweatsuit. And I guess he had his hood up and the dealer was like, you gotta take your hood off. You know, he doesn't say anything. And then the poker room manager at the time comes over, and it's gotta be like 11 or 12 at night, comes over and tells him to take his hood off. And he said, fuck no, I'm not taking my hood off. And the guy was like, well, our rule is that like, we have to leave, you have to leave. And he was like, all right, kick me out then. And then nobody kicked him out. They just let him sit there with his hood up.
Well, it's like that with all these people that we have like this sort of natural inclination to listen to authority figures, even if they're like, you know, stewardesses or whatever, like just people in line at the thing. When anyone scolds you, you just automatically like snap to it, but you can just push back if you want. It's really hard for people to actually enforce most of these rules.
Could you imagine like what the casino is going to say? So like, again, like there's a chance that in the DC area, perhaps there was somebody in the casino with a higher net worth than Russell Westbrook that exists. Like Bruno Mars has been there before. Like, you know, they have people that come gamble. But do you think that the MGM like parent company or whatever was going to come in and be like, hey, way to go, way to kick someone out who could potentially lose millions of dollars at the table because he didn't want to take his hood off? Like, I mean, I think Russell Westbrook knows like they aren't calling some rent-a-cop to come like drag him out by his arm when like they want whales like him in the casino. But again, he is not a guy that punts off a lot of money. I haven't heard.
I like that. And you know what? And gambling, even if you're the smartest sports gambler in the world, I think it's a mistake. I could feel conflicted about that because I do think believe in freedom, but at the same time, I do think it's like a tax on stupidity and people losing money they can't afford to lose.
Who do you think bets more money on sports right at this exact moment? I'm gonna give you a list of three people, and you tell me who bets more money on sports: Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, or Michael Jordan. Or I'm gonna give you fourth, or Charles Barkley. Who bet the most money?
I don't know. I mean, my always the multiple choice. You don't want to go with the obvious. The obvious pick would be Michael Jordan, but I'm guessing it's somebody else.
I don't have any idea. I know that Mickelson bets big, and I know that Charles Barkley bets big on sports. I don't know what Jordan does because like he's an NBA owner now. He's worth like $1 billion. So like maybe he bets on like football, but you probably, I don't know. Like that was the thing with Chuck. Like I never understood if he was betting NBA games or not, but he was hammering college football games and talking about it on like TNT while he was working for Turner.
Yeah, and I think the union should actually, if they want to like, you know, embrace sports gambling, which they probably should.
They're going to. That was a big thing with DC. Like Ted Leonsis wants to turn the Verizon, or it's Capital One Arena, I think now, into a sports book because DC literally yesterday just legalized sports betting.
I think it's a great idea because these, you know, these arenas are, you know, they're busy half the time. I do think the league should make a point to be like, look, if you want to waste your money on blackjack, go ahead. They should outlaw people from sports gambling. I think it's such a scary line. And the refs as well, even if it's not your sport, I just think they should really be careful about that. I don't know if it bit Jordan or not. That's like a rumor. But regardless, let's get back to LeBron. Because the point of that whole preface was to say, you know, kind of kiss LeBron's ass and that we do not hear stories about him being irresponsible in any way off the court. The thing that bugs me the most about LeBron is just the on-court team-related spin and blame shifting that's perpetual for the last 10 years and that the media continues to buy into, right? So recently, I don't know if he was baited or not, but he talked about how nice it would be to have Anthony Davis on his team, which, you know, would have mean a trade, which would mean that most of the guys in your starting lineup would get traded in return. I don't know how that can possibly go over well.
Here's what I don't understand, right? I don't think, again, I don't know tampering rules great. I also don't understand a little bit, like, this whole, we've talked about this on the show before, this whole, like, Anthony Davis is definitely getting traded shit, where, like, he's never asked for a trade, no one's ever really talked about it, but it's, like, always rumored, and it might be a situation like Kevin Garnett in Minnesota, where it just kind of runs its course, like, the team's as good as it can be with him, and it might be better for the league, it might be better for him to go somewhere else, I'm not sure. But, like, if somebody asks LeBron, like, hey, would you like Anthony Davis on your team? The obvious answer is yes. Like, Anthony Davis is one of the where do you rank Anthony Davis right now?
Safely in the top 10, of course. I have a talent-wise top 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, talent alone, he might be the best player in the league.
Right. I have a hard time, like, if you wanted to do, like, historical rankings and to be fair to everyone, I have a problem with him in the top 3 or top 5 just because he hasn't done enough
but
yet.
Just, like, but right now, I don't want to turn this into a Steph Curry argument, but, like, just, like, right now, right? Like, right at this exact moment, I mean, it's LeBron, Durant, and Anthony Davis, and then I think Steph Curry that are the four most special players in the NBA for what they can and can't do. Am I right about that? I mean, do you agree with that?
No, totally. And you talk about guys who fit with LeBron. I think on the court, they'd be devastating. I think Anthony Davis, I don't know, his personality might change a little bit as he becomes more and more famous, but he doesn't seem like the kind of guy would have a problem being, you know, the Robin to Batman.
So my thing with this is, like, if somebody asks LeBron, like, well, isn't it a no-brainer to just say, like, sure, I want Anthony Davis on the team, or I'd like to play with Anthony. Not like, you know, you approach Kobe in the parking lot and he says something along the lines of, like, we need to trade Andrew Bynum because he sucks. This is more, it more seemed like this was a situation, and far be it for me to defend LeBron, but I've been doing it more and more lately. But, I mean, this seems like a situation where it's like, hey, LeBron, would you like to play with Anthony Davis? And LeBron's like, yeah, that'd be swell. You know, like, thanks, Brian Windhorst.
Well, that's where I disagree with you, because that it was a point, and then there was the Windhorst article sort of reiterating the same thing. And you could either take that two ways. Like you're saying, the media is just looking for storylines, trying to bait him, or it's LeBron's camp kind of sending feelers out and controlling the spin and controlling the media. I tend to think it's more the latter. This is a conspiracy theory on the level of Michael Jordan and gambling, but you know, I think LeBron floated the idea of firing Luke Walton earlier in the year, making him the scapegoat. I think now he's, you know, and then they started playing well, and then we heard the MVP talk, and now they've lost two games in a row as of this taping. I think he's feeling some pressure, you know, not to win the title, but not making the playoffs would be a hugely embarrassing accomplishment for LeBron and would kind of cast his, you know, reputation as the universal best player in doubt. And you'd bet on the Lakers making it, but I don't think it's as guaranteed as you do.
Yeah, I mean, I said early in the year when they started out slow that they were 100% going to make the playoffs, and I still feel that way. I mean, it's weird, Zan. I don't know, man. I mean, I agree, like, part of what you're saying is, like, now Houston's playing. I don't know that Houston's playing better, but James Harden, I mean, over the last week averaged, like, 40, 12, and 10 in a four-game stretch. You know, he beat the Lakers. I think he had 50, 11, and 10 against the Lakers in just an awesome performance. Dunked on, you know, JaVale McGee in one of the worst, you know, best posters of the year. But then, you know, he came back against Utah and had 47, and then the travel that we got to watch on TV 1,000 times. But yeah, I could see LeBron saying, like, hey, like, it's not a guarantee that we even get a top four seed, and I need to do something a little different. But this is, again, this is to agree with you, this is relatively par for the course for LeBron. Like, every so often we get, like, oh man, like, LeBron, maybe this guy would be better. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh man, who does LeBron want to play with? And I don't want to, like, the Brian Windhorst shit is so annoying. He's an absolute mouthpiece. Like, we read these articles about how great Brian Windhorst is at his job, and I'm sure he's very good. But, like, the bottom line is, like, you have a job at ESPN because you happen to work at the Akron Beacon Journal when LeBron was in high school. And, you know, LeBron would give you stories. He would speak to you. You created a good relationship with LeBron. Like, you did that. But, like, you know, at this point, like, Windhorst is just saying things because it's, like, it's newsy. And I think it's ESPN, I think, and the NBA has been hurt by having LeBron in L.A. because it's tough. Like, he doesn't play a ton of games on the East Coast. And like, yeah, you get the 8 o'clock like Christmas night game against the Warriors that a ton of people will tune into. But I bet you if you ask the NBA, they'd rather have the 3 o'clock or the 5:30 with LeBron. And you can't do that.
I think they like having him in LA, or New York would have been maybe even better.
I'm just saying like now the East Coast market isn't watching LeBron quite as much. So now there needs to be more story. Like I said, the Luke Walton like firing thing, or like LeBron's waving off Luke Walton that we found out was just totally fabricated. Like I just feel like it's LeBron and everything's a story, but I mean, we'll see.
I bristle at how well he controls the media
Best ever, honestly. The best ever. Because the league actively tried to help Jordan. I don't know that they've helped LeBron the same way.
No. Well, in the sense that, like, I don't think LeBron should get blamed for not winning a title, last title in Cleveland, or not beating Golden State. Like, he played about as well as anyone could play.
He has every, but he has the thing every that I, series, pretty much.
Right, totally. But the thing that I kind of would bristle at is that he's the only superstar, if he loses, the excuse is his teammates aren't good enough. Everybody, and maybe that's because he's the best, but every other superstar, when they lose or they don't get over the finish line, they take 90% of the blame.
I mean, he took a ton of blame early in his career, though. I mean, he took a ton of blame in Cleveland.
I don't remember a lot. I remember him kind of, you know, there was a lot of the Delonte West drama and a lot of Mike Brown blaming and Gilbert blaming, and then, you know, parachuted out of there. But, you know, do you think going forward, I think that the Lakers will be okay. I think they'll make the playoffs, win a round, and probably lose. From New Orleans' perspective, you know, the idea, I've always like thought the idea of trading Anthony Davis was ridiculous and that they should never do it, no matter what. And the fact that Jaylen Brown's not playing that well and Brandon Ingram hasn't taken a leap has hurt the potential packages. But like going forward, like let's say New Orleans misses the playoffs, I think that really does raise the possibility that Anthony Davis could get traded.
The issue is that you gave Drew that contract. You got the Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore deals that are like really hard to get out from under. So like you almost kind of have to make that decision, I think, this year, because, you know, Mrotić and Julius Randle, like they're on relatively team friendly deals, but at the same time, like they're not going to be on your books after a year or two. So it's like with Anthony Davis, I think it's a 2 year window to see like, hey, can we actually become a title contender? And it seems like that's not going to be the case because their secondary pieces, like their depth makes too much money. So unless Davis is going to do it himself. And again, I mean, I think we're talking about a guy that's averaging like 30, 10 and 5 right now. Not quite that high, but I'm just rounding. But I don't know. I don't think. For New Orleans, I don't think it's smart to trade Anthony Davis because, like I said, you're still locked into Drew Holiday for like $125 million. You still have Julius Randle, I believe, for one more year after this one. So I'm not really sure what they do. But it's not like your return for Anthony Davis is going to be totally fair. Like I wouldn't trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers for like Ingram, Lonzo, and a pick. I just don't know that like at a net value level, like I don't know that that's as good as Anthony Davis. And that's the problem. Like, and these guys, it's the same situation all the time. Like when you see these like mega star deals go through, and I won't include this Blake Griffin deal because like they wanted out from under the salary so badly, and he's now, you know, the way Blake Griffin's playing this year, like it's pretty clear that, you know, the Clippers could use him, but it wasn't going to happen. But Anthony Davis, we're not seeing him stagnate. We're not worried. We're worried about like little nicks and cuts and whatever, but like we're not worried about Anthony Davis's knees. We're not worried about his contract. Like this guy is legitimately one of the three best players in the NBA. And when you trade him, like you're just never replacing that value. So I think it's a hard question. I think it's really difficult to decide, like, okay, what is our actual course of action here? And if we trade him, are we actually going to get better, or are we just delaying the inevitable that like we're going to be a 7 or 6 seed anyway right now? And if that's the case, I'd rather keep Anthony Davis. Honestly, I would.
Right. No, I agree. I would try to hold on to him. In fact, I would really try to avoid trading him for guys in year 3 or year 4, like, you know, I like Brandon Ingram a lot, but and Jaylen Brown less so. But you don't want a situation where you trade for a good young player and that's just not enough to, and then you're suddenly the Chicago Bulls.
So, Zane, like who is a player out there right now that you would target? Because obviously you're getting a pick or whatever, but if you're New Orleans, like, who are you targeting? Like, are you targeting?
I think if I was New Orleans and whatever, gun to my head, Anthony Davis had trade me, or I'm leaving at the end of the year no matter what. There's nothing you can do. And I had to trade him. I would try to go as young as possible and just blow it up as much as possible. I know Drew Holiday's on the books, but, you know, he might be movable. He's playing.
Let me ask you this question. Would you trade – and do you think – and this is a crazy question. Could you trade Anthony Davis? Like, would you trade him for like Luka?
I would. That's what I would look at. I would look at, like, let's say Phoenix or Dallas gets a huge high pick, like a top three pick. I'm not a huge DeAndre Ayton fan, but let's say Phoenix gets the number two pick and they offer DeAndre Ayton and the number two pick for Anthony Davis. That's something I would consider.
I don't think Phoenix probably then you do have, that given Anthony Davis's contract, but I agree what you're saying.
Yeah, you want two super young talents and you want them to be so young that you're going to be bad again and then get another high pick next year and just really go full-born tank. But that's why I would want guys like who are 20, not 24, because you don't want guys who are close to topping out or close to getting paid. It's tough. It sucks. The idea of Anthony Davis on the Lakers is very intriguing, though. Just, you have to admit, from a basketball point of view, that's one combination that would scare the Warriors.
Yeah, I would love to see. I would love to see Anthony Davis and LeBron play together. I would love to see Anthony Davis play, you know, I don't know, with any other like really good player, in my opinion. Like, I mean, I don't want to see him go to the Warriors, which we had heard rumored before, but like, I would love to see Anthony Davis play with LeBron. Like, I think that'd be awesome. It'd be really interesting to see what happens. Like, you know, he's from Chicago. Like, maybe this is the other thing, right? Like, Anthony Davis is just constantly in the news. Like, no one's ever talked to Anthony Davis about this. We don't know what he wants to do. Everyone's like, oh, he's going to go to LA. He's going to do this. Like, what if he doesn't want to do that? What if he wants to stay in New Orleans? Or what if he wants to go to, you know, what if he wants to go to Chicago and be part of that, like him and Laurie on the same team and figure it out? You know, I don't think he wants to do that, but I don't know, because we never hear from Anthony Davis. We only hear from everyone else that wants Anthony Davis.
Right. And it could be a Kawhi Leonard where we think of him as one way, but behind the scenes, he views himself a different way. But let's move on. We're an hour into it. Do you have somebody that you have a coach's teacher's pet that you have an eye on that you want to flag for?
Yeah. Monte Morris. This is a situation where, and I'll keep this a little bit shorter, but it's a situation where like everyone wants to try to like outthink themselves. And so like Monte Morris at Iowa State was a really good player, you know, high assists, low turnovers every year, led the country in assist to turnover ratio, could make an open shot, could score 10, 15 points a game. And lo and behold, they draft him 51st overall. And what's he doing, Zan? He is averaging 10 points, 4 assists, 2.8 rebounds, and shocking, less than one turnover a game. 9th in three-point percentage and 6th in turnover percentage in the entire league. And that's your backup point guard playing 25 minutes a night that you drafted. He plays for the league minimum. And after playing 3 games this year, last year, he's played in every game this year. And, you know, played in 25 of 29 games. And he is, you know, showing himself to be a very capable backup point guard. So I think a lot of times guys look at who players are not rather than who they are, because this is the same guy that we saw in college. And it's pretty awesome to see.
On the other side of the coin, my disappointed dad, I'll be quick as well. Somebody that I kind of, you know, wish needs a talking to. I don't know if you've been following Kevin Knox in the Knicks. You know, they're kind of an afterthought right now. He reminds me a lot of different position, different skill, different type of player maybe, but of Dennis Smith in the sense that like they were big recruits who are sort of inefficient scorers as freshmen. They go a little later than they maybe have expected in the draft when they were in high school. And then they like kind of light up summer league and suddenly we talk themselves into being superstars. And then their rookie year, they're inefficient again. Right now, Knox is below 37% from field goal, really not doing much on a team that he has a good opportunity to be a scorer. I don't know. As they get older and older, we talk about it. The more and more you value sort of instincts and basketball IQ and ball movement. I'm getting nervous for Kevin Knox. I'll say that.
One of the things I'll say just to add to that before we go to buzzer beaters, he was injured in the preseason and kind of a late start to the year, obviously. And I do think as a rookie, getting acclimated when stuff like that happens is very difficult. I mean, this happened to Otto Porter for 2 years in D.C., like had a hip injury, had a foot injury. And then all of a sudden you finally see like, OK, with a whole year to, you know, get right and be part of the team. But I agree, the situation in New York, Alonzo Trier's playing really well. Mitchell Robinson has been amazing. Like, you know, you want Kevin Knox in this situation to show some signs of life. And we haven't necessarily seen all that he can be. He needs to shoot it at a better clip. But I like Kevin Knox. I think it's early. So hopefully we are not too disappointed, because this could be a really good draft for the Knicks. And then, like I said, when they have Kyrie and KD next year, you know, all of a sudden basketball is back in New York. We got New York and LA and it'll be exciting. But my first buzzer beater, super easy question. Christmas Day matchups. First one, Bucks and Knicks. Then Thunder and Rockets, then 76ers versus Celtics, which the league wants to make a rivalry so damn bad. 8 o'clock Lakers Warriors in the late game Blazers versus Jazz. Which of those matchups are you most excited to see and why?
The East is sort of the marquee matchup, those super teams, quote unquote, super teams in the East. I like, Houston. I like Oklahoma City because, as we mentioned before, the West is still in doubt. And I think that adds some stakes to a Christmas game that otherwise would be pretty meaningless. So I want to see if Houston's sort of newfound resurgence is real and whether they can establish themselves as the second best team in the West again.
Real quick before you go to yours. Early games, Bucks, Knicks, Thunder, Rockets, Christmas Day unders. If you're a gambler, we were talking about gambling. I'm going to title this episode Gamblers Anonymous. I just thought about it and I'm really happy with it. Early Christmas Day unders. Teams are not, they're not excited about playing this late, whatever. Like, early Christmas Day under. Bucks, Knicks under 100%.
That will bring me to my buzzer beat. I'm going to switch it up. You're a gambler. You have some insight, but maybe a gamble in Jones. What is the most you bet on a game, or what is your worst beat? What is your worst gambling story to scare people away from your picks?
I only like talking about wins. I don't know. Worst beat I've ever had. I would say, interesting question. I would say earlier in the year, I had Florida Atlantic against against Utah State. I had Florida Atlantic against Air Force, and they had the ball covering and then had a punt blocked and then threw a pick six and I didn't cover. And that was all with like 3 minutes left in the game. But I wouldn't say that I've had any terrible beats, like really, really, really bad beats lately.
I'll tell one quick story, gambling story, to scare people away from your degenerate ways. In college, I was gambling on one of those online sites and doing really well. And I thought I had like a read on the NCAA. And I think I won on UNC winning the title with Sean May and or whatever, one of their title runs. And in my head, I'm like, the NCAA, the best team wins. I was sort of on that sort of mindset, which now I would doubt. And so the team that I thought was the best team that year was UConn, super talented, loaded with NBA players like Marcus Williams. I don't know if you remember him, Josh Boone, Rudy Gay was the star of the team. And I'm like, this team is so talented, so many NBA players, they're going to win. So I took my whole like nest egg, $600. And I'm like, they're just going to win this Elite Eight game. I'm not even going to bet the spread. Just to be safe, I'm going to bet money line on this heavy favorite UConn team.
Against George Mason.
It was like, -700 against George Mason. I thought I would just make 60 quick dollars. George Mason upsets UConn. I go down to zero, and I'm scared from sports betting ever since.
The trick is to bet a bunch of games. That way you don't get too high and too low. I've had a couple. Like I had San Diego earlier this year when Denver had like all San Diego had to do, like they had a screen pass, Phillip Rivers throws it into the ground, stops the clock. Then, like, they have an opportunity to just run the ball. They could have taken, like, a minute off the clock, and they don't do it. They punt, and then Case Keenum drove him down and won the game outright because I thought the spread was low. But I haven't – this year has been pretty lucrative for me. I haven't taken any, like, really, really terrible beats. But that one was bad. Early in the year, Air Force and Florida Atlantic was bad because I was betting on Lane Kiffin, like, every week. But
it's fun. I just think it's funny that I live in L.A. I called the Chargers San Diego still, too.
I said that 100 times, didn't I? Wow.
I do it all the time too. I don't. They're still San Diego in my heart.
I mean, even freaking them on Thursday night against Kansas City was a bad beat. If you had Kansas City -3.5, like it's just so. I don't know that situation was really bad.
Okay, last bit of it for you, and I have one more for you after that.
Okay, recently Nick Young, aka Swaggy P, was a guest host on an episode of MTV's Catfish. He was tremendous. If you haven't seen it, he was awesome. But if you could pick one player to host one popular culture TV show, who would it be and what show?
That's interesting. You mentioned Blake Griffin has a great personality. He was great on The Roast. I think he's genuinely pretty funny. But you do need somebody who's responsible. And so for that reason, we talked about Richard Jefferson doing a good job. I think he just seems like he has it together. I could see him having a long media career, sort of like a Ahmad Rashad level. And so maybe that's not the funniest Nick Young style, but if I was like a producer and I needed to hire somebody who's going to show up on time or Jared Dudley, but I'll go Richard Jefferson for that pick. My buzzer beater for you. We just talked about LeBron James kind of mentioning casually and harmlessly that he would love to play with Anthony Davis to the chagrin of his teammate. Let's say you were on a double date dinner party. Our wives are all together. And you casually mention, you know, it would be nice to date Allison Brie. What does your wife do?
Probably just calls me an idiot, like, or talks about how much she likes Glow. I would say that she would be like pretty confident, like, oh, I could never date out. You could never date Allison Brie, and you're too much of a soft guy to like go up and actually talk to her. So she's not worried about that at all. So she would probably talk about how she either thinks Allison Brie and Dave Franco are a great couple, or she would talk about how great she thinks Allison Brie is on Glow.
So no glares. It's harmless fun between swinging Lori couple.
All right. I have a good, you have to remind me of this. I'll tell it after Christmas because we won't get a lot of listeners probably on the after Christmas episode. But I have one funny swinging story that does not involve me, but you got to remind me.
Oh, that's a good teaser.
No. We'll tease it. We'll tease it for next week. It does not involve me, but it's just a way that it's
a perfect Christmas theme. Christmas swinging. That's next week. I'm looking forward to it already.
All right, Dan. I'm out. You play.
All right. Take care, everyone. Email us. Follow us on Twitter. Zandrick Ellison at Gmail. You know our Twitters. Like us. Rate us. All that. And then you get to hear a swinging story next week.
All right, guys. We will be back next week. Everybody have a happy holidays. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Underdog Sports NBA Show with your hosts, Tyler Lurie and Zandrick Ellison. Tune in next week for more NBA storylines and news.